Hello.
Hello.
I'm Craig Fields.
And I'm David Long.
And you're listening to week 57 of Is It Worth It? The Film Review Podcast. And we're back again, going out of our way to watch as many films in the cinema, even the bad ones, so you, the listener, don't have to.
That's right. Craig, what have we planned for our dear listeners today?
Well, our first film that we're going to be talking about today is, in fact, Cruella. Disney have shaken the tree and they've churned out yet another film that may not have been strictly necessary. Or was it? Stick around and find out.
We're then going to be extra quiet for A Quiet Place Part 2. I hope you could actually hear that bit, but we are going to be extra quiet for A Quiet Place Part 2.
We really are. And then we're going to round off the show with The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. Or The Devil,
The Conjuring, Cruella De Vil Made Me Do It.
Oh, that's a good one. So it's another film that the ever-expanding Conjuring universe has added to its list of films that are a part of it. What other films are there? The Nun,
you've got
Annabelle's.
The Nun, Annabelle, a film, forgive me, I can't remember, it had some sort of Spanish sounding to it. I can't remember what it was called. I can't even edit it in. Let's move on. But you are right. It's an expanding universe. It's a universe that I'm quite fond of.
Are you?
I am, actually, yeah.
Oh, I'm interested to hear.
And
a bit
I'm looking
more
forward.
You.
I was looking forward to this film, and I'm looking forward to reviewing it
and hearing my thoughts and hearing your thoughts.
And do you know what else I'm looking forward to hearing? How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, today was Sofa Gate.
I'll let you explain how you came into possession of this sofa first.
So, have I ever? Last week you discussed about a little bit about what you do for a living. Have I ever told our dear listeners what I do?
I don't think you have.
I don't think I have. I work for, I can say this, a storage company. Fundamentally, my job is to sell air. It's to sell empty space to people who require storage. And to cut a long story short, me and my manager had two sofas.
Your manager and I.
Don't get onto that again. Had two sofas that we were in his unit and then they were in my unit and we needed to get rid of them. And I put on Facebook.
Wait a second. Before you go any further. So these sofas belonged to your manager?
Well, technically, no. They belonged to an old customer and the manager was like, I'll have them off of you, because he was just going to take them to the tip. He thought he could make use of them and now he's realised he doesn't want them either.
So you said, I can have those.
I can have them, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a really good deed and put them on Facebook for free and hope that someone in need of a sofa, that I was in need of a sofa, I got a free secondhand sofa when I moved into my new flat, would hopefully come across this post, come down and be like, thank you so much, you've helped me out, you've given me a free sofa. All the comments were started by this cretin.
Oi! You can't say that.
I'm pointing my finger across the studio.
Rude.
How much, mate? And then there was about 20 comments, people inboxing me, how much for the sofa, do you deliver?
Wait. I said, because of the way that you wrote the status, have you got it up? Can you get it up and read it? I think it's an appropriate thing to do, is for you to just read the status and then you'll see, then our listeners will understand
Craig
why these comments.
Craig is making it up.
I'm not making it up.
Let me get the status up. How are you talking in the meantime while I get it up?
I mean, I was.
Oh, I can't get it.
I mean, I wonder if any of our listeners would like to edit that and take that out of context. Go on then, you've now got it up, that's great.
Capital Blocks, free sofa. Brackets, please share. I want to help a friend out, so I'm posting this on my page as opposed to a Hemel group. I'm really hoping you or someone you know is in need of a nice sofa. I'd love to bless someone with a free sofa. Please message me or inbox me for more details.
So you mentioned free quite a lot of times, first of all, in there. So I thought it was quite funny to just say, is this free? And then the comments that just ensued after that were along the same lines.
Is it free? Do you deliver? Do you do it in different colours?
Yeah, I mean, do you? But anyway, the funny part of that, the way that you wrote that, it kind of made it sound like you were trying to help a friend out by putting it on Facebook. Not that you were trying to give somebody in need a sofa.
That's what I was trying to do.
I get, which is a very good deed. Has anyone bitten and said that they want it?
The problem we've got is I managed to acquire another sofa along the way.
Two of the same.
They're slightly different, same color, different size. One's like a two piece, three piece, and one's like a six piece. It's really long. I've now got two sofas. I don't know
where
what
are
to
you
do.
Putting them?
Well, they're currently in our loading bay at work.
Right. Well, what's going to happen to them?
Well, hopefully someone's going to pick it up.
Oh.
Yeah, so...
I don't think anyone wants them.
But...
I told you, put them on free and cheap.
I'm going to put it on free and cheap. But I wanted it... Do you know what I mean? But I wanted it to go to a friend, help someone out.
Yeah.
Anyway, my good deed, as the good Samaritan that I am, didn't go according to plan. Other positive news, pointing the finger of the man that said I couldn't do it, and we argued about this last time.
Yeah, but I didn't say you couldn't do
it. 8 weeks off the cigarettes today, 2 months.
Congratulations. And I didn't say you couldn't do it.
I know, I'm winding you up.
God.
But... I've also been hitting the gym, which I'm really enjoying. I've lost about 9-10 pounds. My weight's fluctuating a little bit, but it is going down. And I'm feeling healthy. Mentally, I'm feeling better. Physically, I'm feeling better. And I'm enjoying the gym.
That's really good to hear. Really good to hear. So I'm really pleased, David. And it's nice to be sitting face-to-face recording this again. I feel like maybe, listeners, does this sound more engaging? Do we sound like we like each other again? Because, you know, when you get the pauses over the internet, it's difficult
you get the buffering.
Yeah, exactly. But what I would like to know, David, is the gym. What's it like being back in the gym?
Mm. Well, obviously, you've got the sanitization of all the equipment, which I don't know whether I don't know if COVID actually can spread on gym machines.
It's
a different conversation, but that's
sweat on
that's
it.
Quite actually, I think going forward, even without COVID, cleaning the gym equipment down after you've used it and sweated all over it is quite courteous and nice.
I mean, I do think that was the policy before, but people ignored that.
I don't know.
You're supposed to put a towel down.
I don't know. You'd have to check on your gym. But what I would say is there are some people that go to the gym, and I'm wagging my finger, merely for Instagram. There are these people that just go there and pose in Gymshark and Under Armour, looking shredded and ripped and better than I do. And also, if you follow us on Twitter, apparently I look like a drug dealer. Yeah. I'm wearing a nice shirt and a pair of sliders. But with a briefcase, apparently I look like I'm selling drugs.
Well, it just looks like you've come back from a foreign country, one that is probably known best for trading in the cocaine experience.
In the Niki Lauda. But yeah, no, look, I'm enjoying the gym. And the most important thing is it genuinely is helping my physical health, my mental health.
You're not one of those people that tends to just sort of go and just not do that much and just stare around. And
no, I've got a fairly good regime, a mixture of cardio and weights.
What about when you go swimming, though?
I can't book swimming.
Oh.
It's fully booked.
I mean, I have heard from friends that have seen you whilst you swim.
What do they say?
You do a couple of lengths and then you give up and you just sit on the side watching everyone else doing it.
I'm not going to name who that was, but I know who said that.
Is it because it's true?
It depends what kind of swim I'm doing. If I'm doing a swim to work out, I will swim quite a lot.
And what's the other swim? The swim where you just look at everybody else?
No,
swimming.
The other swim is a post-gym relaxation. Swim a couple of lengths, chill out in the pool, relax.
Watch and stare at other people working hard in the swimming pool.
I don't stare. Anyway, that's enough about me and my fantastically healthy lifestyle. How are you, my friend?
I mean, you did already ask me that at the beginning, but
I did.
I know what you're trying to get onto here. Health-wise, what's happened to me recently? Well, I had a colonoscopy. Mm. I mean, for those of you who understand what a colonoscopy is, you're going to be like, oh. But for those who don't understand what it is, I will try and summarize it without...
In a PG way.
I mean, it's not a dirty thing, let's be honest. It's simply a camera that investigates the colon. I mean, that's the best way of, or the large intestine.
Mm.
That's the best way of summarizing it. I have to have that regularly, maybe 2-3 years because of the Crohn's disease that I have. But due to COVID, this was postponed. So it's been like 4 years. I mean, 2017, 2018, 2019. Yeah, about 4 years nearly.
Wow.
Since I last had one. So it was, of course, urgent that I actually had this just in case there was anything dodgy going on. And those of you who've had one of these before, it's not a pleasant experience, mainly because of the lead up to it. And it's made even worse by the fact that you have to now isolate for 3 whole days before you have to endure what is the worst part of this. And the worst part of this is having, first of all, having to fast from 9 a.m. the day before.
Yeah.
And then having to take something called Movie Prep.
Lord.
And this is like a powder. And you have an A sachet and a B sachet, and you mix them together in a litre of water. And you have to subsequently drink all of that first batch over the course of 2 hours. And this essentially cleans your insides out. Not a pleasant picture, but it's probably the worst part. It tastes foul. It's horrible. It's probably the worst experience of my life, and I have to do it every 3 years. And so that's that. And you're hungry, you're tired, things are happening, things are moving in ways that you rather wouldn't.
Things are moving.
Yeah. And you just want to go to bed and sleep, and you're tired, and you get there the next morning and you have to drive an hour and things haven't still finished moving.
I get where you're going.
And I'm delirious and it's horrible. But the outcome of this was that I have no active Crohn's disease at the minute. It's very good news. I'm very happy. The medication I'm taking is working. So it's all very positive and I'm all very happy with that.
And we spoke off air. One of the reasons you wanted to talk about this was to raise awareness for Crohn's disease and getting treatments like this done if you feel that you need, or the doctor feels that there's a need for it.
Yeah, absolutely. It is important to never miss your appointments. Always talk about how you're feeling and how unwell you might be. Any ailments that you've got. I know during COVID, a lot of things went under the wayside. If you have any issues with A, your mental health, or B, any ailments like aches, pains, like things that you might brush under the table, I think it's really important that if it doesn't feel right,
you go and
get it checked out. Your GP is your first port of call, and you push as hard as you can to get listened to. And if you really are unsure about what's going on and you don't feel that whatever the decision that the GP made was the right decision, that you push to get a second opinion or a consultant at a hospital looks at you. It has been difficult during COVID, but they are still there for you. And I genuinely believe that you should get this sorted 100%. And that's my, message to the people.
That's your wise words. And talking of checking things out, Craig, should we dive in and do something that we haven't done for some time and check out the box office?
I think that's a wise idea. Let's do it.
This is the Box Office Rundown, brought to you by Is It Worth It? The Film Review Podcast.
Yes, that's right. It's the Box Office Rundown for the weekend of the 4th of June to the 6th of June 2021. Oh, it's nice to say that again.
It's wonderful to see a box office. It's just beautiful.
It is. Films have been playing in the cinema now for a good number of weeks in the UK, and this is our UK box office. David, will you start us off at number 10, please?
So at number 10, we have Demon Slayer Mugen Train from Japan. I hope I said that correct. It's from Sony Pictures. Its total gross is just over, is that a million? That is a million, isn't it? It's very far away from me in the studio, but that is about £1 million. We haven't seen this. We're not expecting to see this, so we're probably not going to review it on the show. But if you, dear listener, have seen this film, particularly if you've seen it in a cinematic environment, please do message us, tweet us, drop us an email, and we'll happily read your review out on the show.
So I have seen the trailer for it. It's played quite a few times when we go to the cinema, and I actually think it looks really good. I'm quite a big anime fan in some instances. Like I will watch them and I will get involved with them. I'm quite intrigued by it. I would like to go and see this, but alas, time eludes me again. But number nine, I'll go to number nine now. It's Raya and the Last Dragon. This is courtesy of Disney Pictures, and it grossed at the weekend £81,000 or just over, and its total gross bizarrely, is only £500,000. I think it's because the preview has come out in the cinema. They haven't had many screenings in the cinema. I think it's now officially out in the cinema. It is available on Disney Plus, and I think we are going to catch this fairly soon, possibly for the next episode. I think that might be wise. And then we'll bring you a review. David, number eight, please.
In at number eight, we have Best Picture winner Nomadland. The distributor is, believe it or not, Disney. Total gross is £1,694,952.
Precisely.
Precisely. Me and Craig got
Craig
a...
and I.
Sorry. Craig and I got a wonderful screener for this. We saw it quite early. We haven't seen it in this. I haven't seen it in the cinema. Have you seen it in the cinema?
No, I haven't actually.
Saw it at home. If you want to hear our thoughts on Nomadland, please do go back to week 55 or 54. Look out for Nomadland. Listen to our review.
I think we saw this in February.
We saw it quite a while ago. Was it worthy of its Best Picture win? Listen to our review to find out.
It's also on Disney Plus.
And of course it's on Disney Plus. So it won Best Picture. You know, that's all you need to know, really. If it's, is it worth it? Well, it won Best Picture. If you want to know if it's really, really worth it, listen to our review.
In at number seven, we have Tom and Jerry, the movie. We haven't seen this. Our good listener, a good listener friend, Pete, saw it. We read out his review last week's show. If you haven't checked that out, listen to the end of week 56 and you'll hear what he thought. I do believe it was a good cinematic experience for himself and the kids.
Yeah.
He was pleasantly surprised, if I rightfully remember. It's taken 96,000 over the weekend, with a total gross of around about 600,000.
Yep.
That's not a lot, is it?
No, but the weekend gross is what the box office goes on, and it did reasonably well at the weekend. Well, it comes in at number seven.
Yeah, I suppose.
What's that's how the box six? Office works, Craig. Yeah.
No, I know, but I mean, it hasn't taken a lot in the total gross.
Its total gross is quite low. It doesn't surprise me. What has done pretty well at the weekend and overall, but maybe not as well as I thought it would do in cinema, is Godzilla versus Kong from Warner Brothers. It took just under 160,000 at the weekend, total gross of 2,200,658, to be precise. This film was ludicrous. It was crazy. It was ridiculous. Do listen to our full review on, was it last week's show?
Week 56.
Week 56. Do take a listen to that if you want to know whether it's worth it. But I will say now.
Was it? Was it on week 56?
Or maybe week 55.
Yeah.
Jinx. I would say this. If you're going to watch Godzilla versus Kong, watch it on the biggest screen possible with popcorn, with a hot dog.
Yes.
I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. I think it's worth it in the cinema. At home, no, it's a bit of a poop movie.
I think I said that the other week, didn't I, as well? I saw it in the cinema in the end, and it was brilliant in the cinema, definitely. In at number five, we have Dream Horse. This is a UK movie, and it's from Warner Brothers. It took £209,000 over the weekend, and it's grossed £209,000 total because it isn't actually officially out at that weekend. I believe you saw this as an unlimited screening at Cineworld Hemel Hempstead.
I did, yes. This film is called Dream Horse. It's about a racehorse called Dream Alliance, a racehorse that I remember watching growing up, a racehorse that I have very fond memories of. I have seen this film. I'm certainly going to rewatch this film. I believe the plan is to review this on the next episode of the show. So if you want to know if Dream Horse is worth it, listen to the next episode. In at number four, is it me?
It is.
In at number four, we have The Conjuring. The Devil Made Me Do It. The Cruella de Vil made me do it. Weekend gross, just over £1 million. Pretty solid numbers. Total gross, £5,312,625. Is it worth it? Stay tuned to find out.
Then we're going to move on to number three, which is Cruella. So another film that we're going to be reviewing on today's show. I don't know why I went that so quick. What's going on with me?
It's the energy. I gave Craig an energy drink today.
I think
it's quite late here,
it just kicked in. So we are going to be reviewing Cruella on today's show. There we go. Slowed that down for you. At the weekend, that took over £1,200,000. Its total gross is four million.
You're like Joe Biden. You just can't do numbers.
I can't. I mean, to be fair, the cursor was over the four.
Yeah.
It didn't look right. It's taken over 4 million quid, yeah. Quite a lot over
nearly
4
5 million.
Nearly 5 million. Nearly 5. Well, I say it's 4.5.
Well, no, let's say it's
4,494,000. So that's about 4.5 million, isn't it?
No, it's not. Oh, sorry. Yes, it is. Uh-huh. I'm being stupid. I was looking at the 9.
Like, beat it, Biden.
Moving
beat
on. Biden. I am Joe Biden in a Donald Trump voice. And at number 2, we
what
have...
What is going on to us? This energy drinks are not working.
In at number 2, we have Peter Rabbit 2. Weekend gross, £2 million just over. Total gross for Peter Rabbit 2, £12,615,157 to be precise.
We should stop being so precise.
Mind-boggling, really. This, let me just say, Peter Rabbit 2 has done really, really well at the box office. And I want to go on record and say, do listen to our last show where we reviewed it in full. This was a much better film. The characters were more well-rounded. It was fleshed out. The yes. script was better. The plot was better. It was actually a pretty decent family film and one that I would recommend taking your family to see. And the box office reflects that.
Yeah, we were both really pleasantly surprised by this movie.
Because I want to say yes. the first one is awful.
The first one is awful. Yeah. And we went into this thinking that this would be much the same. And actually, it really pleasantly surprised us. And I'm actually maybe looking forward to a third if there's going to be one.
Looking at those box office numbers, I would be baffled if they didn't make a third.
Yeah, me too. So in at number one then, number one in the box office in the UK is A Quiet Place Part 2. It took 3,500,000 at the weekend, and that is its total gross to date because that was the weekend that it came out for. And I'm really pleased to see that there is a part two, and I'm really looking forward to our part two Quiet Place review on this week's episode.
Yes, so am I. Craig, I we haven't done this for a while, but I believe this is the part where I, in a dramatic voice, run down the box office.
It is. Go for it.
In at number 10, Demon Slayer Mugen Train. 9, Raya and the Last Dragon. 8, Nomadland. 7, Tom and Jerry the Movie. 6, Godzilla vs. Kong. 5, Dream Horse. 4, The Conjuring. You know, the devil made me do it. 3, Cruella. 2, Peter Rabbit 2. And at the top of the pile, A Quiet Place Part 2.
So it's time for the first review on week 57, and it's Cruella. Emma Stone stars in Disney's Cruella, an all-new live-action feature film about the rebellious early days of one of cinema's most notorious and notoriously fashionable villains, the legendary Cruella de Vil. Cruella is set in 1970s London and follows a young grifter named Estella, a clever and creative girl determined to make a name for herself with her designs. She befriends a pair of young thieves who appreciate her appetite for mischief, and together they are able to build a life for themselves on the London streets. Now one day Estella's flair for fashion catches the eyes of the Baron, the Baroness von Hellman, played by the legendary Emma Thompson. She's a fashion legend who is devastatingly chic, but their relationship sets in motion a course of events and revelations that will cause Estella to embrace her wicked side and become the raucous, fashionable, and revenge bent Cruella de Vil. Oh yes. Let's take a little listen to a clip.
Who are you? You look vaguely familiar.
I look stunning. I don't know about familiar, darling.
Your hair, is it real?
Black and white ball? I like to make an impact.
Right. What was your name?
Cruella.
Oh. That's quite fabulous. And you designed this?
You did, actually. 1965 collection.
Oh, no wonder I love it. It's mine.
I fixed it.
So that was a clip from Cruella. A brilliant clip, actually, where we've got Emma Thompson and Emma Stone, both of them really smashing performances out of the park. Where do I start with this review? Well, I'll start by saying my expectations for this, Craig, were beyond low. I thought, firstly, I had very fond memories of 101 Dalmatians.
The cartoon, yeah?
No, the Disney film.
But the live action.
The live action one.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive me, I haven't got the names of the actors and actresses in it. Starring many, many Oscar time nominated actress who I think should have, who was in Hillbilly Elegy.
Glenn Close.
Glenn Close, there you go. You can tell this is off the cuff. That version growing up as a child, I loved it. I also loved the Cruella cartoons. So I had ingrained into me strong, passionate childhood memories. I remember Glenn Close doing, "And where are the puppies?" You know, and Anita, darling.
Anita, darling.
Yeah, and brilliant. So I went into this film thinking, they've got something good. Mm. I don't have the Rotten Tomato numbers in front of me, but that Disney 101 Dalmatians was a damn good film, a crowd pleaser. Went in with pretty low expectations, but immediately, Craig, those expectations that I had were just sort of blown away, because I want to go on record straight away and say this is a really good film. And I will break it down into a number of layers. Firstly, it's directed by Craig Gillespie, and I think that's important because he's known most recently for directing I, Tonya, which I thought was a very, very good film. Also, I believe starring Paul Walterhauser, who is in this film.
Yeah.
So yeah, the direction was solid. I want to talk about the cinematography. I want to talk about the costumes. I want to talk about the acting.
So there's a lot to talk about.
There is a lot to talk about, but off the cuff, before I say if it's worth it, because we save that for the end, Craig's doing a funny face at me. Yeah, I was really surprised by this film. Like, I think this is very, very good, and I will expand and tell you why after. Do you want to come in? Or you just
I was waiting for you to sort of shoehorn me in there somehow before you stole the show. I was going to say much the same. I mean, the marketing for this film was quite low because I think they weren't sure if it was going to come out in the cinema or not due to COVID. So they drip fed trailers over time. And I saw a trailer and I was really looking forward to seeing it. I wasn't looking forward to watching it at home because I thought this needs to be seen on the big screen. And I was right. It really does need to be seen on the big screen because I've watched it twice. Okay. I've watched it at home on Disney Plus.
Oh, wow.
And I've watched it in the cinema. And I must say, the amount of detail that you pick up on in the cinema, because that screen is so big, you see the little details of things written down on pieces of paper and newspaper cuttings. You read all of those little nuggets of information that you actually miss at home. Now, obviously, my screen isn't like super tiny, but it's big enough. It's a large screen still. Mm. You know, it's not cinema grade, but I think I certainly missed those details, and I actually got a much more enjoyable experience from watching it at the cinema. I will say that Emma Stone in this film as Estella / Cruella is just absolutely off the charts here.
Yeah.
She is, it's such a good performance. It's one of the best performances I've seen this year.
Mm.
Even Emma Thompson, I think, as the Baroness, she's actually channeling Glenn Close here.
She's also channeling, I think, Meryl Streep from Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah, there's certainly that crossover there isn't
that
there?
Real, and she was nominated for an Academy Award, believe it or not, for Devil Wears Prada, and Meryl Streep. She gets nominated for everything, but there is that energy, the sass that she has, the arrogance, the when she walks into a room, everyone must bow, and she's a real presence.
Yeah, I mean, it's the essence of Cruella that's really ingrained in her. So it's like the older version of Cruella.
Absolutely.
Coming through in her. Emma Stone's Estella / Cruella is actually a much more likable, well-rounded, engaging, I don't want to say hero, because she's not a hero. We know she's not a hero, but she's more of an anti-hero in some ways. You know, in this story, this is her story. This is, you're rooting for her, despite the fact that what she goes on to be and what she is ultimately an evil, despicable character. She's likable.
Yes.
I really liked her. I enjoyed and engaged with that character more so than I ever believed that I thought I would. And it is definitely Disney shaking that tree and finding niche characters, perhaps, or iconic characters from previous films, and giving them a larger platform to understand their background and their psyche and understand why they came to be the people that they became. I think the film is also channeling the Joker a bit, or Joker. There seems to be this split personality going on. Mm. And it's quite a dark film, isn't it, in that sense?
Well, yeah, it's funny you should say that. There was a moment in this film where I was thinking, do you know what? I really, really like this. And I almost wish this wasn't a Disney movie.
Yeah.
I wish this wasn't a 12A. I wish this was a 15 or maybe even an 18. And I want it to take a really dark Parasite-esque twist. Obviously, it doesn't do that because it's a family film.
Mm.
But it is, I think it's some of the most original, dark, powerful work that I've seen from Disney in a number of years.
Yeah, I think this follows suit from Maleficent, if I get that right. You know, that was quite dark in some ways, and it was very enjoyable, but it still had the Disney, you know, trying to make it family friendly. And I think this would have actually been a masterpiece if it wasn't a family friendly film. I think it really could have told. It's very good. It's a really, really good film, but I think it's lacking in some departments. And I think it is lacking in the sense that I wanted it to be darker.
Yeah, I agree.
I wanted it to be darker.
Mm.
Now, as we said at the top of the synopsis, that it's set in sort of it's a punky era, but it's not a punky era, but it's very punky, the film.
Yeah.
But not punky enough.
Yeah, I saw you. Did you tweet that somewhere or did you message me that?
I think I messaged you it. Yeah, I mean, it needed to be a bit more punkier. It needed to be a bit darker. It needed to be a bit more psychotic in a way.
Ooh, Craig.
I know, it really did. And I think they could have pushed the boundaries a lot further.
I know what you mean. That Joker element, that Parasite element, that's what I wanted. But what I thought it did cleverly, and we can sort of move on to some of the acting here, was the way it pulled it round to make it family friendly was with those two street thieves villains, one played by Paul Waterhauser and the other played by Joel Fry. What did you make of those two characters? Because they were very Tweedledee and Tweedledum, weren't they? They were sort of those silly, we're from London, but we, you know, we're Cockneys and we, you know, we rob you and we don't really do it very well, you know.
I mean, they are they not periphery characters in the original films? They're like they drive around in the car that catches the dogs.
You mean the character played by Hugh Laurie?
Yeah. I think they are those characters.
Sort of spin-offs, yeah.
They are, in a way. Horace and Jasper, Horace played by Paul Waterhouser and Jasper Joel Fry. They are very good. I think Joel Fry is better in the sense that he is actually English, British. He has the accent down to a T because he is well suited to that role. Paul Waterhouser is not a typical Cockney because he is American, and he does put on the typical Cockney voice a bit like Dick Van Dyke, but I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's so bad it's good.
Yeah, exactly. And he got the most laughs in the film from my point of view, because I did laugh at him the most.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed his character.
Mm.
I think the weakest element of this duo, however, is that you don't see enough of them almost. You don't see maybe a darker element to it. We almost get, there's a scene that plays out when Estella is full on Cruella and she comes in and smacks something off the table. I felt like they could have pushed that darker, that scene there, and they could have been some sort of more emotional pull from those two characters. Maybe something a bit funnier, maybe. I don't know, like just a little bit more. And that's always what I was waiting for in this film. I think story-wise, the element of surprise and payoff in some of the final scenes of this film. I don't obviously want to spoil it.
Non-spoiler review, of course.
Exactly. but there is a moment that you hope to sort of a moment that gets revealed that you don't really want to get revealed in the way that it does. And it's like a bit of a cop out because it's a family friendly film.
Yep. And it's
little elements of those cleverness that could have been pushed further.
Yeah.
That make me not dislike the film, just not enjoy it or not praise it to the extent that I want to have been able to praise it. I think that's the best way of putting it.
I mean, it's interesting we're talking about this element of it wanting it to be darker. Joker was trending on Twitter. I sort of clicked on it. And the reason Joker was trending on Twitter is because people were making that comparison. And when I was doing a bit of research about the film, you may have noticed that Cruella didn't have her, her infamous cigarette in the long cigarette holder.
Yeah, there's that as well, isn't there?
Because Disney made an agreement to themselves a number of years ago that they wouldn't show people smoking in their films. So Cruella wasn't able to smoke. So it's things like that where her character's been slightly watered down. It's like what we wanted. I've got a food analogy for you here.
Okay, great.
Well, it's actually a drink analogy, but not a non-alcoholic one.
Good.
What we wanted was 100% freshly squeezed orange juice, and we got orange cordial. Is that good enough?
Yeah, I think it is.
But it was damn good cordial. It was Robinson's. Again, we're not in a sponsorship with Robinson's, but I'll plug them anyway.
You know what? I think they're owned by Coca-Cola as well. You know? The listeners are going to be listening to this and thinking, what are they talking about?
All will be revealed shortly.
At some point. Listen to a trailer.
I'm getting sidetracked. But yeah, no, it definitely could have been darker. One thing I did want to touch upon was just the cinematography in this film. I think it was by Nicholas Karakastansis. I think that's how you say his name. Mm. Sorry, Nicholas, if I got that wrong. But I thought this film was shot superbly. Like, I always look at cinematography, and particularly with my Road to the Oscars series, with like an Oscars lens. And I'm not saying this is going to get nominated at the Oscars for cinematography, because it's not. We'll get onto its Oscars chances shortly. But I thought this visually there was some what could become quite iconic shots. I thought the camera movement was good. I thought the way it was shot was nice. I thought visually this was very impressive, Craig.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think cinematography-wise it was very good. I think if we're going to push it further, I think the way that it's been graded was very good, very gritty. So I think the editing in that sense, or the colour grading more so, was very, very, very good. And I think that's just a standard for Disney, though. They plough a lot in there. I think the music was very good as well. Yep. And I think the soundtrack was great. I think they spent a lot of money on getting certain pieces of original songs in there. That's, you know, less than the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, I think there would have been a big payout for a number of people here. If you don't mind, Craig, I just mentioned Oscar's chances. I did want to mention a category where I think this is not only a genuine nominee, but a potential winner. And that is in costume design. I think this is a slam dunk nomination come Oscars for costumes. And I actually tweeted our friends Mike and Oscar, who make award season all year round without the stuffiness. Give their podcast a listen. And I asked them, I said, it's a slam dunk nomination. Do you agree? And also Mike said, I hope so. It shoulda, coulda, woulda been a nom last year, in my opinion. This year is a whole different animal with all the big studio films coming out, but it's definitely out to an early lead in both costumes and hair and makeup. And I couldn't agree with also Mike more. For me, this is number one in costumes. It's number one in hair and makeup. And the costume design was done by two people, Jenny Beaven and Tom Davies. And this is the statistic I wanted to give you, the Oscars fact that I said I would give you. Guess how many times Jenny Beaven has been nominated for an Oscar?
10.
How did you get that?
I don't know. I just guessed it.
Yes. Yes, I've got in my notes 10-time Oscar nominee, 2-time Oscar winner, going to become an 11-time Oscar nominee. The costumes in this film were fabulous, darling. And the hair and makeup was gorgeous. You know, the production design. I was a big, big fan of this movie. On a number of levels. I haven't got the Rotten Tomatoes scores up, but I imagine they would be very, very good.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Emma Stone. Like, So I, when I say this season, I mean from the last Oscars, which happened in April, mm-hmm. moving forward to the next Oscars, that's this season.
Yeah.
She's my number one performance. Now, that's not me saying she's going to get nominated in Best Actress, because she won't.
That's where we currently stand.
But
at
that's
the minute.
Where she currently stands. Yeah. I thought her portrayal of Estella moving into Cruella, a bit like Arthur Fleck becoming the Joker, I thought it was original. I thought it was unique. I thought it was... I don't want to say empowering, because that's slightly wrong when you think what she goes on to do. But it is empowering in the sense that it's good to see a strong female lead. And it's good to see the message that, you know, if you've got a passion for something like fashion, then pursue your dreams.
A passion for fashion.
And then people will say, but David, the fashion involves skinning dogs. Well, yes, and also no, because this film is a standalone. It's going to become... more than a standalone, because you're smiling. They're already talking about a second one.
They've already said that it's going into production. Mm. The deals have been signed.
Well, they hinted at it, didn't they?
They hinted, but it's been confirmed.
Okay,
now.
Wow.
100%. There will be a sequel here. Whether that leads into the actual film, I mean, they did suggest that it would, but maybe there's a gap there before the actual 101 Dalmatians. I'm not so sure. We'll see. Mm. But again, I'd be very much so looking forward to it. I think we might be ready for questions.
I think we are. I just didn't, when I said it's a strong, empowering, almost inspiring lead, I didn't want to make people think that I was encouraging the skinning of puppies. I was encouraging people to pursue their dreams.
I think it's inspirational from an actor, actress kind of point of view.
It's a damn good performance.
It's a very, very good performance.
And Emma Thompson as well. And yeah, I think we've covered everything from direction to cinematography to production design to our friends Mike and Oscar. We've done it all, Craig. I'm ready for the question.
Okay, David, Cruella, available on Disney Plus and in theatres right now. Is it worth it?
100% worth it. I've only seen this once. Even though we've hit record today, I am going to go and see this again, because I think it's that good and I think I want to study it a bit more. It's going to be in the box office for a while, so we can touch upon it more in that, in the box office rundown. I think the performances are brilliant. I think the direction is great. I think the cinematography is very, very good. The costumes are wonderful. The hair and makeup is brilliant. I think this is one of Disney's best films for many, many years. Mm. Could it have been a bit darker? Yes, but it somehow manages to be a family-friendly film while also being quite dark. This is good stuff from Disney. For me, it's worth it. Craig, Disney's Cruella, is it worth it?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were going to say no then.
No, of course I was. I mean, this is definitely 100% worth it. What I will say is that you must go and see this in the cinema. If you are unable to, I would say it's maybe worth the $19.99 paying for watching it on Disney Plus currently. Maybe if it's yourself on your own, I think that's quite steep in terms of pricing. So maybe, I mean, a cinema ticket would be cheaper.
Yeah.
Genuinely, and you get a much better experience in the cinema. But if there's a lot of you, if there's a whole family, it's definitely a great family film to watch. It is a bit long for me, actually. I think at 2 hours, 14 minutes, it's quite long. It could have been darker. It could have been a bit punkier, but I still think it's an absolutely stellar film. I think it's got everything that you'd kind of want from this. It's got great performances, costumes, direction, cinematography, sound. It's perfect in that sense. There's elements of it that story-wise, maybe I would have changed. But yeah, definitely 100% worth it. So that was our review of Cruella
Devil. just Cruella. Good film. So it's now time for our second review on this week's episode, and we will be reviewing A Quiet Place Part 2. Following the deadly events at home, the Abbott family must now face the terrors of the outside world as they continue their fight for survival in silence. Forced to venture into the unknown, they quickly realise that the creatures that hunt by sound are not the only threats that lurk beyond the sand path. Before we dive into this review, let's take a little listen to a clip.
God! It's okay. We're okay. We're okay.
That's okay.
Mom. Oh my God.
So that was a clip from A Quiet Place Part 2. Following the first events from the first film, obviously, we've sort of this continuation, but the clip that we had there was from like a flashback. Mm. I'm really sorry that we have that kind of clip there. It's obviously a lot of
noise.
but it did demonstrate probably some of the louder parts of the film because it sort of replicates exactly like what the first film did. It's quiet and they have to be quiet because these creatures are, I don't know, they have this super hearing. Yeah. If they hear you, they come for you, you're dead. So what the first film did that was really good was that you walked into the cinema. We knew that this was going to be a quiet film. Those around us probably didn't. And they came in with snacks and goodies, popcorn, loud items. And within the first few minutes of that film starting, everyone was deadly silent. Mm. There was not a sound made. And you know what? The second one did exactly the same. I went into a pretty packed screening to watch this and people had loads of food still. You know, I saw them coming in with drinks and popcorn and scrunchy, loud, noised packets of sweets. I don't know. And it was still so quiet. You could hear a pin drop. And I absolutely love that John Krasinski has been able to replicate that in a second film without compromising, I think, the first movie in the sense with the story and how we move this horror sci-fi drama on. And I'm going to say it straight away. I loved it. I really, really, really loved it. I loved the first film and I loved this one equally the same, I think. What did you think?
Yeah, so it's amazing sitting here listening to what you've just said, because I've made a few notes. I actually saw this film twice, and I will touch upon what it was like to see it originally and then upon a rewatch. But in my notes, I made a very specific note that people started talking and misbehaving in the trailers and at the start of this film.
Yeah.
But within 10 minutes, maybe 5 minutes, they were captivated. It's in my notes, just like the first, they went absolutely silent. So strange that you said that, because what that is, that's a sign of a gripping and engaging film. And I was deeply worried about this movie because the first A Quiet Place created quite the stir in the cinematic realm on film Twitter, because it was such a unique experience sitting in a cinema almost in completely deadly silence, and that's because one of our characters is deaf and the contrast between what she can hear and what's going on and the noise that these creatures make is so effective. And like you said, the film starts with a flashback of day one of how the creatures arrived on Earth, and then it jumps to day 474. What's great about this film, in the opening sequence and in a number of scenes throughout the film, it pays homage to the previous one. For example, there's a little rocket that you see in the pharmacy that actually features in the first film. Yeah. I don't know if you remember that bit. Yeah. You know, one thing about this film, Craig, is the pacing is impeccable. Like, and I do mean that, impeccable. The way it takes action, fast-paced action thriller with these creatures running around, killing people, causing devastation, and then it pulls it down into really good, slow, heavy dialogue. And the screenplay, when they talk as well, is great. What I noticed upon a rewatch and a further study of the film is actually when these characters are talking, you're interested in what they say. And that matters in a horror film. That matters in a thriller. The sound in this film is wonderful. The Academy is now sound.
Just sound.
Just sound.
Yeah.
This has a chance in that category because I think they could respect A Quiet Place, what it's done in both the first and the second one.
Yeah, this is, I'm going to jump in here a little bit quickly because I respect what they've done sound-wise. What I don't respect, however, is that they've taken a character that is fundamentally deaf. And there's subtitles in there for that character.
Yeah.
So that those who are, you know, capable of hearing, you know, non-deaf people can understand the conversations that are going on there. However, the vice versa to this film is that they don't show respect to the deaf community, I think. I feel like it should just be a standard to have the whole film subtitled. Like, it makes no sense to me that it's not.
Oh, I mean, that's...
It's actually slightly disrespectful, I think, to that deaf community. That the leading person in this film is a deaf person, and the film isn't subtitled. Like, you have to go to a subtitled screening to be able to get
that. That would be the case of every film, though, wouldn't it?
Well, no, it wouldn't be, would it?
What, so you're saying you want subtitles on all movies?
No, but this one... But what I'm saying is, like, as a you have a choice to go and see films in subtitles, but when this film is so entwined with the fact that it has a deaf person
in it, what you're saying,
and there are conversations going on, you know, between, you know, there's sign language going on in this film, and they're subtitled for those who don't understand sign language.
It'd be American sign as well, which is slightly different to
British. ASL, not BSL. But the point here is that I think it's really disrespectful not to be putting on more subtitle screenings, at least, or just putting the film out with subtitles, and that's your standard screening. I genuinely believe that would have been a step pushing the boundaries further. Like, the boundaries have been pushed with sound here. Push those boundaries further and make the equality there as well.
I agree with what you're saying, but you would have to roll that out for all movies.
Why? Why would you have to roll that out for all movies?
Because people who are deaf want to watch more than just A Quiet Place Part 2.
Of course, but they have subtitle screenings for deaf people as well. They should be putting on more screenings for deaf people.
I agree with you there.
But this film fundamentally has a deaf person and sign language in the film, and they cater for those who are not capable of understanding sign language. Why are they not catering within this film for those who are deaf, who want to go and watch the film at the same time as those who are capable of hearing things as well? It's actually very disrespectful, in my opinion. Like, the film centers on a deaf person. She is our leading actress in this, almost. You know, the whole plot relies on this character. Why not show more respect to this character, to that actress, and actually subtitle the whole film?
Yeah, I mean, the character, the actress you're talking about is Millicent Simmons. I thought she was... A lot of people actually said that she should have been nominated for an Oscar in the first film in the supporting actress category. I'm not necessarily in that camp. I can't remember the nominations that year, but this is her performance in the first film was brilliant. Her performance in this film is brilliant. I haven't got all of the actors or actresses in front of me. Now I do. Noah Jupe as Marcus, I think he has tremendous facial expressions. There's one particular moment where he's in great distress, and that really comes across. Yeah, he was in Honey Boy, Le Mans 66, A Quiet Place. He was really good, Craig. I'm not sure what you thought of his performance. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I think he's a really evolving actor in the industry. He's obviously been attached to some big films, like you just said, and I think he's going to continue to really grow and expand, and I think he's going to be around for a very, very long time. I expect him in some later years to actually possibly maybe go for an Oscar or get some kind of award. I think he's a very, very... very capable young man, and I think you know, the cast in this film is completely solid. I mean, Cillian Murphy, who's playing Emmett here, he's brilliant, but it does feel like he's a continuation of another character from a film that's very similar in terms of, you know, the disaster movie. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Are you talking about Dunkirk?
No, actually, I'm not. I'm talking about 28 Days Later. There's the essence of him in that film.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about his character in Dunkirk, where he was very shook up and isolated and do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I mean that he's maybe pulling on characters from other films that he's played, Dunkirk and possibly 28 Days Later, which I think was one of his best films that he's done. He's brilliant. And, you know, the introduction of him as maybe a new character within this universe, it doesn't disappoint. I don't think, like, we don't miss John Krasinski too much. We get enough of him in the film.
Yeah.
Enough to satisfy, and then you're introduced to this new character that actually I think fulfills that want to have more of that Krasinski character. Emily Blunt, let's talk about Emily Blunt, because I think she's an amazing actress. She's been around for a long time. I think she's evolved with these films. You know, Mary Poppins, when she did that, I thought she was brilliant. And then, obviously, the husband and wife dynamic here with John and Emily being married and then working on a film together, acting together, but also John directing her.
Yep.
I think they're a really capable team, and I'd actually love to see another film that they work on together that's not A Quiet Place.
Yep.
I do believe there's going to be another film coming out that I think, actually, if the rumours are correct, that John Krasinski's not going to be attached to it. It's going to be almost like a sub-character that's going to be taking it on another path. It's not going to be this family, I don't think.
That would be very, very worrying.
It would be very, very worrying.
I will go on record saying I would be absolutely furious if this had a spin-off and like almost a parallel, not universe, but a parallel film was made. I want to.
They've got an idea. I think John Krasinski is going to be attached to it in some way, but that he's not going to be directing.
I thought his direction in this was brilliant.
Yeah, so do I.
Really, really good. And what I wanted to talk about, you and I mentioned this before we hit record, and I said I was going to mention what I have created as the Apollo 13 effect.
Okay, I want to hear this.
So Apollo 13 is a great example of a film where most people know the story of Apollo 13. Most people know the ending of that film from the history, but that film still manages to keep you gripped and captivated and on the edge of your seat. Upon a rewatch, and the reason I rewatched this and went to see it again in the cinema was because I wanted to see, did A Quiet Place to have that, what I call the Apollo 13 effect. Was I still going to be on the edge of my seat?
The suspense, was it still there?
Was I still going to be nervous? Would it still hold my attention? Not only do I think it did, I think it was better on a rewatch. I really genuinely believe that. I appreciated the cinematography more. I appreciated the sound more. I appreciated the character development more. I noticed lots of little Easter eggs that were planted in there. I don't have it in front of me, but I thought the soundtrack, I think I did put in my notes, but I can't see it, who the soundtrack was by.
Like, as in sound design? Or
the soundtrack, the actual music in the film.
So the music, so the score, you mean?
Yeah, score, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I thought the score was brilliant, and the way they use the score as well. So there's moments of total silence, there's moments where you've got this score coming in, there's moments where you hear these creatures, this sort of ticking noise, and what I've conjured as the Jurassic Park effect.
God, how many effects are there going to be?
But there was a feeling of the original Jurassic Park, you know, where the Velociraptor and they're in the kitchen and they're hiding from it.
The suspense again.
That was that feeling of Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
So there's Jurassic Park, there's Apollo 13, there's loads. Is it, people will ask me, David, which one's better? And for me, I think A Quiet Place Part 2 is probably better than the first. I genuinely think for the development, it's a thriller. I think it's great.
They're very, very connected.
And they're very different as well.
And they're different and they're not different. I mean,
this is pacier.
It's a continuation, and it is a part two. But the funny thing is that they never actually planned to have a part two, which I find funny because, you know, John Krasinski always wanted it to just be a standalone film, never again, you know, nothing to continue it. And I think the audacity to call it a part two, like they all were expecting, it was always going to be there.
What do you think it should have been called?
No, I think it should have been called A Quiet Place Part 2.
Yeah.
They managed to pull it off that they had the idea initially going to be a two-parter or a three-parter or whatever it's going to be. But, you know, they managed to pull that off. They managed to weave in another story. Obviously, it's for commercial reasons and financial reasons. You know, it made a lot of money at the box office previously. Yeah, I was going to
say, it should have been called A Quiet Place Part 2 because it did well at the box office.
Exactly. You know, and I think people and audiences wanted to see what happened to this family next. Mm. So, yes, I rate it for that. I kind of almost wanted them to leave it at a quiet place.
Mm. So did I, but I'm glad they made a part 2.
I'm very glad. Go on. Not is it worth it?
No, not yet. Does this lead us to a part 3? And do you want a part 3?
It doesn't lead us to a part 3. And I think it does genuinely. I genuinely think actually leave it where it is now. Mm. And maybe if they're going to milk the cash cow, let's see where they take that. And I think John Krasinski's got an idea.
Mm.
It's his idea of where they're going to take this next. And I think the sub idea, if they can pull it off of following a different character, if it's going to be Cillian Murphy, that would be cool. But, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. The last thing I wanted to say before I ask you the question, or you ask me the question, was there was one. I'm going to ask you the question. Is that what we're saying? There's just one bit in the film I wanted to touch upon. It was when there were three scenes all happening at once, running parallel next to each other.
Mm.
Don't want to give anything away, but I thought the way they were put together, you had three very slow burning sequences that built up in tension, running parallel against each other. Three of our characters in different places at the same time, what was happening, the way that was put together, I thought was brilliant. And upon a rewatch, that was still captivating and great. I think Craig's looking at me like, shut up, David.
I'm just very listening intently.
Just listening intently. Our listeners are also listening intently, but Craig, they want to know, of course, the reason they're here is it worth it? So I'm going to ask you the question. A Quiet Place Part 2, it was made because it did very well at the box office. Is it worth it?
Yes, A Quiet Place Part 2 is 100% worth seeing in the cinema, might I add. It is only available currently in the cinema.
Yep.
Thank goodness for that. It is the film that possibly could save cinema. And I think this is something that we're not talking about, really. The cinemas are reopening. They are still in a precarious position in terms of financially being stable.
Mm.
And I think this is bringing audiences in. I think people want to be scared. It does seem like, actually, cinema at the minute is dark.
There's nothing really light-hearted on, is there? Although there is Dream Horse.
Which we will review next week. But this week, it is very dark. And I think out of all of the films this week, maybe A Quiet Place 2 is number one. And, it is number one in the box office, is it not? Or was that Cruella?
It is number one.
I think next week Cruella was going to be number one.
That will be interesting. We could have a little side wager on that. There comes the gambling addiction. What do I think? I think A Quiet Place 2 will stay at the top. I think as a franchise, I think it's just got a lot of buzz behind it at the moment.
Yeah, but it's playing with Disney, isn't it?
That's a tough game to play.
It is, exactly. But no, it's definitely worth seeing. If you're going to ever watch it in the cinema. Mm. So that means brush off your unlimited cards, what's the Odeon one? Limitless. Brush that off, get that out, go to the cinema, or just buy an actual ticket.
Dare
I think
say,
it's totally worth it.
Yes.
But you know what? Go to the other kind of cinemas as well. The local cinemas, the Rex, the Odyssey, they are opening back up as well. You know, those of you who know what I'm talking about, go to them, support them, because they need our support.
Yeah.
More than anybody, I think. The big chains, they can survive.
Yeah, I totally agree.
But go and see it in the greats. You know what? Actually, I'm going to the Odyssey again soon.
Oh, wow. Whatever you see, please bring us a review.
And I'm hoping you're going to catch it as well. I'm going to see Rare Beasts, which is Billy Piper's directorial debut.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't know that. That's
and I'm very excited. We've got a cheese board already booked as well.
Have you actually?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you can have a full-on cheese board with extra crackers. Great.
Extra crackers? Are you mad? Extra Stilton? Or my favourite cheese, which is...
I like the quince jelly too.
I like the French one, the wetter blue cheese.
I don't care.
Okay. Craig, ask me the question.
Is blue cheese worth it? No.
Roquefort, that's the one.
Oh, okay. That sounds nice.
It's beautiful. It's like Stilton, but not as dry. Stilton's quite crumbly. This is warm, wet, moist. Why the hell are we talking about cheese? Ask me the question, man.
A Quiet Place Part 2. Is it worth it, David?
Yes, this is 100% worth it, and it's really worth seeing in the cinema. The sound on this film is incredible, the way it surrounds you, the use of silence. It's never predictable. It's really tense on a rewatch, which is a sign that it's a very good film on the first watch. It's got a great soundtrack. The pacing is impeccable. The screenplay is also very good. The acting from a variety of our protagonists is brilliant. Big shout out to Millicent Simmons. The Apollo 13 effect, it keeps you captivated even though you know what's necessarily going to happen. Brilliant film. Watch it, watch it, watch it.
Oh, and that's the end of the review. Sorry, I forgot to press the button quick enough.
It's like,
it's just there.
Craig Fields, button pusher.
So that brings us to the end of the show. Or does it? No, it doesn't. This is the last review that we're coming to. David, I was just trying to see if you were listening, but you were on the phone.
I was just checking
again.
My phone.
I was just testing you.
I'm listening. Come on, crack on.
Okay. Well, it's The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. So The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It reveals a chilling story of terror, murder, and unknown evil that shook even experienced real-life paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren. I didn't realise they were real-life investigators.
Of course they are. That's the whole Conjuring universe is based upon the real stories of these real people.
Okay, well, this is one of the most sensational cases from their files. It starts with a fight for the soul of a young boy, then takes them beyond anything they'd ever seen before to mark the first time in US history that a murder suspect would claim, "Oh, I was possessed by demonic possession," as a defense.
Would claim demonic possession as a defense. Was that your impression of being possessed?
No, that was my impression of a young boy going, "I'm demonic possessed."
That was really bad. Play the clip.
Hey! You okay there?
Jesus. I think I hurt someone.
This is Ed Warren, here with Lorraine. Alright, let's get started.
Residents of Brookfield were shocked this afternoon by the broad daylight murder of Bruno Sauls.
The court accepts the existence of God every time a witness swears to tell the truth. I think it's about time they accept the existence of the devil.
Whatever is going on, whatever happened that day, that was not Arnie.
It's a witch's totem. We think your family was cursed.
So that was a clip from The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. Where am I going to start this review? Well, the first thing I'll say is I was a big fan of the original film, The Conjuring. I liked The Conjuring 2. The universe actually includes a film called The Curse of La Llorona. La Llorona, something like that. It sounds Spanish. Do forgive me. Annabelle Comes Home, Annabelle Creation, Annabelle, The Nun. So it's a wide variety of things in the Conjuring universe.
Yeah, the only one that I think I've actually seen is The Nun.
Yeah, so, I mean, I haven't got them in front of me. I did look at the Rotten Tomato scores. Some of the films get really good scores. The Nun was one of the lower ones.
So really, from my experience of the Conjuring universe, the bar was set low.
Yeah, well, I'm slightly different. I like the Conjuring universe, and I like actually that you didn't know that this is based upon these real people.
Well, no, what I didn't realise was that it was, I believed that it was based on some real life factual things that happened. I believed that the story happened, that this young lad murdered his landlord and that it went to court and he pleaded not guilty on the basis of demonic possession. And then I thought that they took that and they brought these characters in who are fictional characters and they wove that into this factual story there to bring us an element that was very different. But actually, they are real-life paranormal investigators of some sort. Paranormal investigators?
And I think demonologists, something like that. It's quite a close link to the Catholic Church and exorcisms and...
Like Van Helsing.
Well, I don't know where we're going with this, but what I wanted to say, let's get back on track. I'm a fan of the Conjuring universe, so expectations were... Hi. Initial thoughts. The film is... One thing that the film has is it has almost the Saving Private Ryan effect.
Oh, no. I think I almost preferred the food analogies.
No. So what happens in Saving Private Ryan, they have the D-Day landings at the start and it starts with the action. What happens in The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It? It starts with this big, bold, elaborate exorcism.
I mean, they literally threw the paint at the wall.
They throw you straight into it. There's demons, there's things flying, there's blood coming out of showers. I will make points, and here's the first one. Good balance of jump scares and tense moments. Solid performances from Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga. A couple of silly moments. One, actually, upon a rewatch, I actually watched this with Craig, and there was one moment where... It is silly, and it should have been cut from the film. Craig actually laughed out loud. I think this whole film pivots on its believability. And when I was doing some research on this film and on Twitter, I actually saw Mark Kermode say that almost none of this could actually happen. That's a quote from Mark Kermode. Almost none of this could actually happen, therefore he gave it a really bad review. I, being a religious person, believe that actually some of this could happen. So it did suspend my belief. It did get me interested. And it's a slower burner than some of the Conjuring films, but there are fireworks. And I thought it was pretty good, actually. I was pleasantly surprised. And me and Craig have disagreed about this, but I think fundamental to the enjoyment of this film is whether it's believable or not.
Did you actually listen to the full Kermode review?
No.
So he didn't actually give it a bad review.
Did he not?
No. So he did say that the believability is very low.
Yes.
But actually it's his favourite Conjuring film out of the whole universe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. See, what I try not to watch whole Kermode review. I love Mark Kermode, by the way. I try to avoid his reviews before doing mine.
Yeah,
so I don't want to plagiarise. Just become a commode regurgitator.
A commode regurgitator.
But I saw that. Almost none of this could actually happen. I thought he gave it a bad review. But I think that's a pivotal point. How much of this could happen? How believable is this? Do you believe, as it says in the film, Craig, every time you go to court, I mean, it's changing now.
Well, that's the line that I really like, and I did say that to you.
Say why you like that.
Every time you go to court, they swear on the Bible, the believability of God, or what is it in the trailer? Accepting God as being true.
It's about time we accepted the existence of the devil.
Yeah, so, I mean, the reason why I like that line is because it actually makes me laugh. Because I'm atheist. Yeah. I respect your religion, David. Mm. But to still stand up into a court of law and swear on a Bible, I mean, I think that's ridiculous.
I didn't know you were going to say this on it. I totally disagree. I think to swear, I'm a Christian.
On
the Bible is a way of saying I promise it in front of God as my witness to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing
exactly,
but the truth.
But
help me, God.
But a lot of people are atheists.
Yeah,
so it means nothing. Don't believe in God, or may pretend that they believe in God, and they will swear on a Bible, and it means nothing to them. And I think if you're standing up in a court of law, and you're charged with murder or whatever, and you're swearing on a Bible, honestly, it's neither here nor there. I mean, you know, what's the point? And again, someone could, as they say, you know, plead not guilty on the basis of demonic possession, and they have to take that seriously because they are. you know, there's God. They must be a devil.
Yeah.
And if that's what they're saying, then they have to take that seriously.
Yeah.
And to me, it's a load of cobblers. Genuinely. And that's why the believability is quite low in that sense. But it did make me laugh that they were saying that, because actually that raises the bar a little bit in the sense that I'm trying to suspend your belief. They're trying very hard to suspend my belief. I enjoyed that moment. It did make me chuckle. But the worst moment is one of a reanimated corpse. Ridiculous. It made me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
I mean, there are moments of this film where it hinges on being ridiculous. And I think the story is quite ridiculous. I think the
whole based concept on a true is, story. Based, yeah, I haven't done research into how true it is.
The truth is that a young man murdered another man, and he stood up in court and said that he was possessed by a demon.
I mean, I've heard some defenses in my time, but that's a good one.
That's the truth. That's the true part of this story. And then the rest of it is just taken out of context.
But don't forget, we don't want to give away the ending, but they do tell you what happens to said person, and they tell you how it pans out. And
come on, this is Hollywood, David.
I would imagine that is the truth. They're not going to make it up.
Yes, they are. This is Hollywood. They stretch the truth in every essence. Even a film that's trying to be as true as they possibly can, the truth is always stretched because you have to sell the film. And in a film from the Conjuring universe, David, they are going to stretch that truth, that believability.
Well, there's truth or there's fiction. You can't stretch truth.
No, yes, you can.
What do you mean?
What do you mean you can't stretch truth?
Well, you've either got truth or a lie, isn't
this? That's very cute of you, David, but you've got truth and then you can extend that truth and you can stretch it to the point of no longer being true.
Well, the point I'm making is at the end of this film, they say in writing what the conclusion to the story was. I would assume, I might be wrong, I haven't researched, that what they said was gospel, was truth, was what, you know, that happened. I would be very surprised if they changed the ending, because it sort of defeats the object of telling the story in the first place. I will look it up.
But what is the point of telling this story in the first place?
Well, to make money.
And how do you make money?
A Quiet Place too.
How do you make money on the Conjuring universe from a story that is fundamentally just somebody who's pleaded not guilty to being demonically possessed, and that's just... That is stretching that truth and making it, trying to put in, you know, like that beginning scene. Come on. I mean, they're paying homage to The Exorcist in there. I mean, Kamo said that in his review. Mm. And it's true. I saw that when I was watching the film, when the priest or the father turns up and he's standing in the driveway and the long shadow. There's homage to The Exorcist there. And they are trying very hard, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I did enjoy it, and I don't think our listeners were expecting to hear me say that on the basis of what I was saying. It's the only proper Conjuring film that I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, the first one is currently on Netflix, worth a watch.
Okay, I'll give it a go. It's not an Insidious film. It's not The Last Key and make it The Last Key. it was enjoyable. I enjoyed the characters. Patrick Wilson played Ed Warren there. Vera Farmiga, Lorraine Warren. I enjoyed them as a pairing, and I didn't believe them completely as their characters, I suppose, but I like them. They're very likable. You're rooting for them the whole time. I quite like the occult in some ways. Documentaries about the occult are where I prefer to go, because I really enjoy those. This is Hollywood, though. It is typical Hollywood, and it does push the boundaries of believability to the ninth to the nth degree, I suppose. And they do that so much so in that, you know, that opening sequence of hell.
But do you know what I mean by when I say the Saving Private Ryan effect? And I keep talking about effects in this bloody episode. It opens with that. Some people, I imagine, would say the only way for this film was down. Normally, the exorcism, the big showpiece, would be in the middle of the film. But they went for it at the start, which is hard to pull off. Saving Private Ryan is a great example of a film that does pull it off.
Yeah, but Saving Private Ryan has a very captivating story. Again, that is something, that story isn't based on complete truth.
No, of course not.
And they've taken these fictional characters from the D-Day landings and they've told a very interesting story. They've tried to do this here, but the believability of, there's witches, there's reanimated corpses, there's serious paranormal activities, and they've got to try and prove the believability to a court here to try and get this bloke, this young man off death row. And you know, there's poltergeist action going on here, things moving about, people being floating in midair. You know, it is really pushing those boundaries of suspending my belief. But nonetheless, it was exciting. It was fun. It was a bit of rubbishness in some instances. I did enjoy it, though.
Yeah.
I did enjoy it.
I mean, I watched it twice. And look, what I would say is, having watched A Quiet Place twice, A Quiet Place improved for a rewatch. I think it got better on a rewatch. This didn't get better. This was like, yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it keeps the series alive and well. They had some flashbacks to when Lorraine and Ed were younger. I thought that was quite cute. The way the film ended was a little bit more upbeat, without a spoiler. I thought this was likable and surprising. It could have been terrible, but for me, it was actually pretty good. I wouldn't use the word solid, because it wasn't solid, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It wasn't solid. There was things wrong with it, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's a good horror, and there's jump scares in there, but the jump scares aren't as... Insidious, The Last Key, hopefully no more keys. The jump scares were so predictable. At least in this one, they weren't as predictable. The music was by Joseph Bishara, also known for The Conjuring 2, and Insidious. Thought the soundtrack was great in this. Mm. I could talk for hours, but do you want to...
round it off?
Yeah.
Go on then.
Craig, The Conjuring. The devil made me do it. Is it worth it?
Yeah, this is worth seeing in the cinema. If you want to go and see a, not great horror. No, I don't want to say that. If you want to see something that's got a lot of jump scares in it, if you're a fan of the Conjuring universe, I think this is definitely worth going to see in the cinema. If you got those unlimited cards, I think that it's totally worth going to see. Definitely go and see it maybe more than once if there's nothing else playing that doesn't take your fancy. I can't say that I am 100% sold on it. I enjoyed it. It was a bit of light watching in the sense that I'm not sure if this is worth it.
Can I just say one thing? This film was about a boy that was possessed by a demon and stabbed someone to death 22 times, and you just called it a bit of light watching. I love it.
I say a bit of light watching is that I didn't have to think too much, though.
No, you don't have to think. A Quiet Place 2 makes you think a bit. This is very... it's like Love Island. It's mush. And everyone knows watching Love Island is bad, but we all do it. Ask me the question.
David, The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It. is it worth it?
I can just imagine Craig in court. Well, The Devil Made Me Do It, mate.
I was possessed.
Look, I don't think this adds anything new or revolutionary to the Conjuring universe. It's certainly not a Hereditary, which is really going to sort of shake the horror world up. It's a bit of a run-of-the-mill goblin. Like Craig said, there's one part where a dead body comes back to life and runs and face plants, and it's ridiculous and it's laugh out loud. But other than that, other than the face-planting dead man, solid performances, some good jump scares, and overall, yeah, for me, The Devil Made Me Do It was worth it.
Nice.
Nice. Terrible excuse.
So that brings us to the end of week 57 of Is It Worth It? The Film Review Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the show as always, and we'd ask you, if you could, to share it with your loved ones.
Yep, friends, family. Again, me and Craig are smiling at each other. Normally, we have some sort of script. No script. We're just going off the cuff. Look, we love your interaction. If you like the podcast, tell people, give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, all that kind of stuff. Interact with us on Twitter. Send us an email. Craig, dearest Craig, how can they email us?
Well, you can send an email via your email client of choice. And the address that you need to put in there is mymailisworthit@isitworthitpodcast.com. That email address again is mymailisworthit@isitworthitpodcast.com. You can follow us on all the social medias. You know, find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Go to the website, www.isitworthitpodcast.com, and there is the links are there instead of just trying to search for it. It's all there. It's easy peasy. Very, very good. Yes.
I was going to ask your permission.
Yes.
Can I say what's coming up on next week's show?
Of course you can.
On next week's show, we will be... in 2 weeks' time, I should say, we will be reviewing Dream Horse, Hitman's Bodyguard Wife, Hitman's Bodyguard's Wife, and Supernova.
is that right? Hitman's Bodyguard's Wife?
Hitman's Bodyguard's Wife, I think.
I'm not sure that's correct.
Dream Horse, I've seen it. I'm looking forward to reviewing that. Supernova, Stanley Tucci, looks tremendous. Craig's got it up. Yeah, it is. The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard.
Yeah, so it's not the Hitman's Bodyguard's Wife.
Oh, dear.
It's the Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard.
Anyway, we don't know the names of the films, but it's going to be a damn good show. Make sure you tune in to week... What will that be? 58? 58, yeah. I can't do maths.
No.
We're coming to the end of the show, end of the track. Should we call it a day?
I think we should.
See you soon, folks.
Good night.
Good boot.
Goodbye.
Perfect timing. Listen to that. The piano just fades out. Good job, mate. God, it's hot in the studio. Mate, that was great.